Welcome to Forward Thinking, a podcast from Foundation Source. I'm your host, Dori Krieger. Foundation Source is the nation's largest provider of comprehensive support services for private foundations, bringing unparalleled knowledge and expertise to over 1,200 clients across the country. The best ideas in philanthropy aren't always the tried and true. Trailblazing entrepreneurs and next-generation philanthropists are transforming the sector with inspiring ideas and innovative strategies. Join us as we explore the advice, experience, and insight of some of the creative minds shaping our collective future. In this segment of Forward Thinking, we learn how to become generosity coaches for the next generation as they navigate both digital and real-world philanthropy. In her book, Generous Genes, Raising Caring Kids in a Digital Age, Susan Kreitz Price provides a roadmap for parents, grandparents, and others who want to teach kids from 2 to 20 to live compassionately. Susan is an award-winning writer and youth philanthropy expert. She is author or co-author of 7 books, including The Giving Family, Raising Our Children to Help Others. Susan, it's a true pleasure to speak with you today about your book and how the online world offers new opportunities for families to teach and engage young people in giving. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me, Dori.
A grounding principle of your book is that parents and extended family are generosity coaches. What do you mean by that term, and how do we become successful generosity coaches?
Well, when I think of a coach, I'm thinking of a sports coach. And, you know, their job is sort of to teach you the fundamentals and then put you out on the field, let you experience or execute what you've learned, and the coaches are there coaching from the sidelines. And I think of a generosity coach that way, too, because I think in the early stages, kids really need to have some exposure and teaching about the concepts of sharing and giving. And, you know, maybe they volunteer together as a family, but then when they get older, you're not going to be as directive. And I think too often parents want to be too in kids' face about how they should be doing their volunteering and giving. So throughout their childhood, you're encouraging them, you're offering them help, but you're helping them find their passions and then letting them decide where those passions take them in terms of sharing their time and their treasure.
I think it was really helpful in the beginning of the book. You help establish what's in it for us. How does encouraging generosity benefit families? What's in it for them?
Well, you know, I thought that was kind of maybe a bad question to ask when you're talking about being generous. But I think it's really important because obviously if there weren't some payoffs, people wouldn't be helping each other. And so there are so many benefits. Just a few. I mean, I think none of us want to raise spoiled kids. We want them to grow up to be adults who don't have a feeling of entitlement, but who really care about the world that they're living in. And so one big benefit of starting young and instilling these values is that kids learn empathy and caring, but they also learn, as they're doing volunteering, they're learning problem solving, they're learning skills, they're gaining confidence. If they do a yard sale to benefit their local animal shelter, they're learning about marketing and counting money and sales. And so there's skills to be learned. It's a great way for families to spend quality time together. So you're doing good and spending time together. That's a double bottom line. Especially as kids get older in the adolescent years, it really helps them not focus so much on their own troubles when they see other people's troubles. And the one that we often forget to mention is it's fun. You know, that's why they call it the joy of giving. And we have lots of research that shows that altruistic activities stimulate the happiness parts of the brain. So it's a good thing in so many ways.
What really inspired you to write this book after the success of The Giving Family, and what prompted its structure?
Well, The Giving Family was written in 2000, and everything in it is perfectly valid still, but there's this huge hole. And that is that we have now layered on technology into kids' ability to do philanthropy. You know, in 2000, Mark Zuckerberg was still in high school. We didn't have Facebook or Twitter or YouTube or a million other ways that kids are engaging online. Kids were not walking around with the internet in the palm of their hands, or as someone said the other day, screens in their jeans. And so everything has changed. And I decided that it was time to provide some new ideas for parents on how to understand what kids are doing, understand what they could be doing, and then making sure that they don't do all of their generosity virtually, but that they do some in real life.
I think also one of the special things in this book is the fact that you wrote parts of it with your daughter, Julie. That adds such a lovely texture to the book. What prompted the idea of working together, and how was that experience?
Well, I thought it was important that we give parents multi-generational viewpoints. And so this is a book by a boomer mother and her millennial daughter about what she experienced growing up and what worked and what didn't. And I was very surprised by some of the stories that she shared, because there were things that I didn't realize we had done that had a real impact on her. So that was nice. I think, too, now we're talking about Generation Z, and so we're bringing in a third generation, and it's important to keep this conversation going because every generation is going to be new. So I'm now bringing the perspective of a grandmother to this because I am now, Julie has just had a baby. And I feel like there's a legacy to be passed on, and it's good to have an understanding from different points of view. One thing that I keep emphasizing is that grandparents can play a really special role in all of this, too. We are all raising our grandchildren. So philanthropy is multi-generational. And there are lots of little things. Like, I talked to one grandmother who said, you know, I just wanted to have this conversation with my grandchildren, and I sent each of them a check for $25 at Thanksgiving, and I said, give this to a charity and tell me what you did with the money. And she got back these very touching letters, which she shared with me. One of the older daughters, granddaughters, gave her money to a breast cancer charity because her mother was a survivor. So for this grandmother, the experience of having that connection with the grandchildren was very special. So I'm all about multi-generational philanthropy.
One of the things I particularly liked is I aspire to be the best aunt I can be to all of my nieces and nephews, is that you do talk about extended family, too. And, you know, a lot of work on family philanthropy just talks about the parents and the grandparents. What prompted you to include the extended family?
Well, I think because we all can play a role in raising this next generation to be givers. And aunts and uncles could play a really important role. Some of these are the special times that people have with their younger relatives, and they bring their own experiences. And so having conversations with kids about, you know, particularly nieces and nephews, about what you do in your philanthropy, what causes do you care about, and who has helped you and why. Kids really love to hear that from people other than their parents.
That's a really good point. I'm glad you shared that. What is a good age to begin having those conversations, and how should parents begin approaching it?
Well, I think we parents worry too much about some of this, and I think we shelter our kids too much. And I also think that we need to start when they're really, really young with all of these messages. I mean, I always say flippantly that, you know, when someone says, how soon do I start teaching them about giving, it's the answer is the first time they say the word mine. And so from there, then it's not just talking to them, it's showing them real life. And, you know, obviously you're maybe not going to take a four-year-old to a facility where there are, you know, mentally ill people who might be, you know, frightening to them. But there are certainly plenty of people who take children to visit homeless shelters where there are kids that they can play with, so that they learn that, you know, kids are not any different because they're poor or they're well off. We're just, you know, in different circumstances. But for kids to be able to be exposed to that, I think is important. And I know I talked to one woman who said she took her child with her, like a three-year-old, when they went to visit some people at a place that cared for Alzheimer's patients. And she was worried at first, but it turned out that the little girl found somebody a woman who would roll a ball with her back and forth for an hour, and no one ever spent that kind of time with a child. So the woman had a great time, the little girl had a great time. I just think we get too hung up, and there are stories in the book about examples of what kids can do at even really pretty young ages. Now, obviously, they need to start probably simply with volunteering in their neighborhoods, and that might mean going to visit an elderly neighbor, making cookies for the firefighters in the fire station to thank them. You know, there are all kinds of things you can do right in your own neighborhood. But then gradually, they're going to learn with all the other places that they have contact with, their schools, their congregations, and so forth. So start young. That's my main message.
You know, you talk about these stories. They're great how they're woven in and really bring to life kind of the suggestions that you have. In one of them, you talk about how generosity helps kids cope with scary situations. I just loved that story. Would you tell it?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunity for people to be aware of this, since we do have a lot of scary situations, and obviously explanations are have to be age appropriate. But on the day of the Boston Marathon bombing, I saw a quote on Facebook from Mr. Rogers, obviously from the past. And he said that when he had seen scary things on TV when he was a kid, his mother would tell him to look for the helpers. And that's a great message, because there were plenty of amazing people helping the people who'd been injured at the Boston Marathon. And for me, one of the most standout memories of what happened on 9/11 was the weekend after. I was in Georgetown, and on the street, I saw this little girl. She maybe was about 9, and she was playing God Bless America on her clarinet. And she had a little sign and a collection plate, and the sign said, "Patriotic Songs for the Red Cross." And she had a whole bunch of us standing around watching her and throwing gobs of money in, and all of us in tears. And I could see her father standing on the side being so proud of her. And I'm going, okay, this kid figured out a way to use her talent to do good. And I think it's a really good example of how, if kids see things that are so scary, they think it's uncontrollable, the way to help them get through it is to show them that it's not out of our control, that we can do something to help.
I'd love to talk more about those four T's: time, talent, treasure, and ties. What is the best way to identify those volunteer opportunities? And really, can you really bring a 2- and 3-year-old out there to start volunteering with you?
There are people who are helping find more opportunities for families to volunteer. But that kind of gets back to, you know, sometimes you have to use your own creativity too, and just find simple, simple ways to do good in your neighborhood, in your community, in your preschool. Later on, it's easier, because kids are then finding ways to volunteer through their, you know, scout troops and their clubs. But also, because community service is being required so much in schools now, it's kind of already planned for them in some ways.
As we shift to allowances, when they actually have money of their own to give away, and I know money can be such a tough subject for parents, what's your advice on when to begin paying an allowance? You know, what should it be paid for? How much to give? There's a lot of conversation around that right now.
Right. I get asked about that a lot, too. It is on people's minds. And I think my theory has been, you know, somewhere around 5 or so, when they start to understand what the different denominations of money are. But also, I mean, you know, because you give a little kid a dime and a nickel, and they might say they'd like to have the nickel because they think it's bigger. But at some point, they catch on to what money means when they start asking questions about money. I think starting early is important. I think every kid should get an allowance. It can be a small amount, obviously, for a little kid. But tied to that is that they are also now responsible for some of their own purchases. So it's not like they're just getting free money and they don't have to use it. It's a tool. So the tool is to help them figure out, well, what do I really want versus what do I really need? Is this toy really worth it? Would I rather save for something bigger? There's a lot of lesson to be learned in the allowance. And I think one mistake that parents make is tying the allowance to chores, because it's a real trap. I mean, if you say you don't get your allowance if you don't do your chores, then kids can say, and some will, don't really care about the money, I'll just skip the chores. So chores are separate. Chores are something that kids are expected to do as part of their contribution to the family. And if they don't do their chores, there are consequences other than the allowance. They are, you know, you take away screen time or whatever. But the allowance is being paid in a way to help them learn how to budget and also hopefully how to share. So some parents require that kids give a third for sharing, a third for saving, and a third for spending. I don't necessarily think you have to do that, but I think it's okay if you don't require that some of it is spent on sharing. You can do other things to encourage kids. You can offer to match their contributions. So whatever they feel like giving, you know, they can give more because you're now showing that this is something you really value. And I think we need to give them a reality check, too. If they decide they need to buy something and they need to take an advance on their allowance, then, you know, you can charge interest. I mean, I think this is a really serious and important subject.
Once you overcome that hurdle of, okay, there's an allowance established, And part of this is going to be given away. How, particularly in this digital age, do you start identifying what causes to say yes to, what to say no to? How do you navigate that?
Well, it's interesting because I read a study recently that said most adults, the majority of adults, do not research organizations before they send them money, a donation. A lot of it is not very well thought out from the standpoint of weighing what kind of impact you want to have with your money. I mean, it's the same thing foundations do.
Sure.
But personally, it's, you know, you get a little bit more lax. So I think that's a place where parents can really help kids who are now going to be barraged with not only things that they see online that might appeal to them, or pitches to give money on the mobile phone. I was at a zoo recently where there was a sign on the elephant enclosure and it said, text $10 to help us save the elephants. And I'm sure that was directed to kids. So there are a lot of ways that they're going to start reacting too. And the fourth T, which is ties, means they're going to be hit all the time on their social media networks to give to their causes of their friends. So I think there's a lot you can do to, for example, take a look at a website that they're thinking of giving money to, helping them understand what their money might be used for, what they could buy with that money or fund with that money. And frankly, especially as they get older, and it's good for us adults too, digging in a little bit to what their financial picture is and who's on their board and, you know, really do research. I mean, we all need to do more of that, but I think parents can really help kids as they're starting to be exposed to a barrage of opportunities.
You know, I would be remiss if I didn't ask about the ALS Bucket Challenge that happened over the summer and just the social media involvement, a lot of, well, you know, challenge. There was mm-hmm. a little bit of peer pressure there. Mm-hmm. What do you think about the Bucket Challenge? Was that, I mean, it seems like it was full of teaching opportunities.
Well, I think just from the standpoint of it introducing something that's creative and fun, but also did what the organization hopefully wanted to accomplish, which is raise money for research and also create a lot of awareness. You know, it was nothing but good. I think there were plenty of other nonprofits that then were trying to figure out how to duplicate that. And it's a complete flash in the pan. No one understands what makes one thing compelling and one thing not compelling. And for kids, they need to be thinking about, okay, is this something I care about? And do it not because it's fun to pour ice over somebody's head, but because I'm really thinking seriously that this might be useful. The person who has the second highest number of Twitter followers is Justin Bieber. And we know he has, you know, he's had some issues, but there's still a lot of kids following him. And some time ago, he told them that he was supporting a charity called Pencils of Promise, I think it is. And so I went to that website to see what it was like. And, you know, you're thinking, okay, I don't want my kid to just be given money because celebrities tell them to. But if they went there and researched on that site, you would find something that was totally kid-friendly, a great compelling story by the young man who started the organization to bring education to developing countries, kids in schools that weren't getting much education. It tells you how your contribution, what kind of impact it'll have. They have their financials very transparent, easy to understand. I just thought, you know, that's how you can help your kid. You don't say, well, don't give because Justin Bieber said it. You help by going through and seeing, well, let's find out about this. And mm-hmm. it was mm-hmm. a very compelling story.
You talk about in the book, and we've talked during our conversation, start young, start early. It's never too early. What if you're starting a little later? What are some things that a parent, extended family, et cetera, could start doing tomorrow?
Well, if we're starting late, I think part of it is assuming that your kids can understand what your motivation is for wanting to share these values and to understand what you're doing. So, I mean, part of it is modeling the behavior. You're donating your time and money. Do your kids even know what you're doing? Do they know why? Some of it is encouraging them to get out and explore the world, and maybe that's not signing them up to volunteer 10 hours a week at the homeless shelter, but it could be, you know, it could be taking a vacation where you do some help the national park while you're there. There's all kinds of opportunities to get out and do things so kids can explore what they really care about. So part of it is keeping the conversation going. Part of it is modeling behavior. And the most important thing is helping them find their passions. So if kids really don't know what they might be good at or where the opportunity exists, they may not act on it. Sometimes parents really have to help kids figure out what they're good at, what they might like to do, and then find those opportunities for them. And then not tell them they have to do it, but encourage it. Coaching!
You've worked with a number of philanthropic families. How have you seen the Family Foundation play a role in helping kids learn more about generosity and gratitude?
Well, I think in individual family foundations, there's a lot more interest in trying to get kids engaged in giving early as individuals, because their hope is that they're eventually going to be hopefully taking a seat on the board of the Families Foundation. I know that a number of them, many, many more of them, are creating next generation boards for not just, you know, the young adults, but even down into the middle school age, so that kids can be involved. And I've certainly seen kids as young as 8 being given opportunities to recommend grants, and who then go out and visit a place and shoot the video of it and bring it back to the board meeting. I mean, kids are pretty savvy when they get an opportunity to make a difference.
You know, you talk about storytelling so much, and just this whole modeling thing and learning from others in your family and also learning from folks in the community. When you were writing the book and researching, was there anything that surprised you?
I think I am endlessly surprised about how smart kids are, how creative they are, how we totally underestimate them. As a parent, I can admit to that myself. You look at your 9-year-old, you think, oh, well, you know, he can't handle that. I'm going to have to jump in here and help. And the more I research what kids are doing today, the more I am astonished. And, you know, one of the things I just saw was a statistic from the U.S. Labor Department that this Generation Z is more inclined to be interested in socially entrepreneurial jobs than past generations. So I think that's what we need to do. We need to embrace our kids and be so excited about what they can handle at even really young ages. And they're not just taking canned food to school. They're thinking, what's the root cause of why people are homeless and what can I do about it?
Thank you. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you.
And sharing about your book, Generous Genes, Raising Caring Kids in a Digital Age.
Thanks, Dori.
To learn more about this segment of Forward Thinking and our work at Foundation Source, please visit our resources page at foundationsource.com. While you're there, tell us what you thought of this segment and who you'd like to hear in a future one. We'd love to hear from you. Our podcast is produced by Gabrielle Galanek. I'm your host, Dori Krieger.